Genesis 43. Let's review where we are as we come to this portion of Scripture tonight. Now remember, there's a severe famine going on in the land. We have a hand right up over here. Okay, thank you. Travis is around all around trying to get everybody covered here. Go, Travis. Yay. Okay, we're all settled in. Great. There's a severe famine going on in the land. Remember, God had told Pharaoh through Joseph's interpretation of Pharaoh's dream, that there was going to be a famine coming. They had spent 7 years of abundance getting ready for the famine, and sure enough, the famine came, and now that severe famine is going on in the land, not just Egypt, but all over the place. Joseph's brothers have gone down to Egypt from Canaan to get food, and by this chapter, as we get to chapter 43, they've now returned home to Canaan with the food that they bought on that first trip down to Egypt. However, in Egypt, they had to leave one of their brothers, Simeon, behind, because the man in charge, the man who's second in charge, the second in command, right under Pharaoh, that man, the man in charge of dispersing the food and all, remember, he had accused them of being spies. And he said, okay, to prove that you're not a spy, leave one of your brothers here. Go ahead and take the food and all and go home. Then you return with your youngest brother, because when they went, they didn't take the very youngest brother. All the other brothers had gone, but not Benjamin. So this man in charge of dispersing things said, well, I'll tell you what, leave one of your brothers here. Go ahead and take your food, but leave a brother here. Go down, get your youngest brother, bring him back, and that'll prove that you're not spies. Now this man in charge who had set all this up, this man in charge of the distribution of the food and all in Egypt, of course, is none other than Joseph, the brother of all those brothers who had come down from Canaan. The brother of those brothers who had sold Joseph into slavery some 20 years ago. And through a process of events, God has brought him this place where now Joseph is second in command in Egypt. When they came down there, Joseph had recognized his brothers, but the brothers had not and still have not, by the time we start this chapter, they do not recognize that it's Joseph. As I say, it's been 20 years or more. He speaks with an interpreter now. He's not speaking in their language. He is probably dressed much like an Egyptian, and they just don't recognize him. But he knows it's his brothers. So he kind of sets things up, if you will, so that he can get his whole family down there. So they go home with that first batch of food and all, having left Simeon behind. They get back to their father, and they tell him about this man in Egypt. Remember, they don't know it's Joseph. They just say, hey, this man in Egypt, he wants us to bring Benjamin back to him. He's got Simeon, and if we want Simeon back, we're going to have to go back. And if we want more food, when we go back, we got to have Benjamin with us, or he won't even, you know, see us. So Jacob responds, by the way, you can just kind of get up to speed here. In chapter 42, the last verse, but he said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead. This means that Jacob still, he thinks that Joseph is dead at this point. And he is left alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you would bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave. So as we wrapped it up last time, they're in the situation where they're running out of food again, and if they're going back and get food, they're going to have to bring Benjamin with them. But Jacob's saying, no way. I've lost Joseph. I'm not losing Benjamin. You're not taking him back. So chapter 43 of Genesis, verse 1. Now the famine was severe in the land. And it came to pass, when they had eaten up the grain which they had brought from Egypt, that their father said to them, go back, buy us a little food. So they start to get hungry again. They've used up that first batch of food they bought from down in Egypt. So Jacob says to his sons, go back and get some more. Go back and buy us a little food. Verse 3, but Judah spoke to him, saying, the man solemnly warned us, saying, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. So Jacob tells his sons, okay, now go back and get some more food. And basically the sons go, no way. No way, we're not going down there. Dad, you don't know this guy. He's mean. We got down and he was mean to us. He treated us roughly. He spoke to us roughly. He accused us of being spies. And we went through all this stuff. And he said, if we go back and don't have Benjamin with us, we won't even see his face. Nope, no way. No way. You don't understand, Dad. We're not going back unless you send Benjamin with us. Verse 6. And Israel, that's also Jacob's name, same guy. Jacob and Israel, same guy. And Israel said, why did you deal so wrongfully with me as to tell the man whether you had still another brother? So their father goes, he comes back with, well, why'd you even tell him you had a brother? Basically, the idea is they're running out of food and they're kind of stressed and they're kind of snipping each other. Well, how come you did this? Well, how come you did that? Why'd you have to go and tell him you had a brother? Verse 7. But they said, the man asked us pointedly about ourselves and our family, saying, is your father still alive? Have you another brother? And we told him according to these words, could we possibly have known that he would say, bring your brother down? What are they saying? They're saying, how are we to know he'd say that? How did we know when he was asking us about our family that he'd turn around and say, we're going to keep one of your brothers till you bring the other one back? How are we supposed to know he's going to do that? We're just answering his questions. What they don't know is that that man they're talking about is their other brother, is Joseph. And God is orchestrating this whole thing to deliver the entire family. See, they think they're just in this tight spot, and oh man, you don't understand. But God's working. God's doing all this. As we looked at this morning, and remember, just keep in mind as you go through this, the story of Joseph is a story of the sovereignty and faithfulness of God. God is working through all these events. They don't see it right now, but they're going to. And it's a good, good lesson for us to remember. Often we don't see God working right at that moment, but to remember, He is always at work. He's always out for our best. Verse 8. Then Judah's one of the sons, said to Israel, that's his dad, said to Israel's father, send the lad with me. In other words, go ahead and let me take Benjamin. And we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you, and also our little ones. I myself will be surety for him. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. So basically he says, look, Dad, you got to let us go, and you got to let us take Benjamin, because the guy wants to see us if we don't, because if you don't, we're all going to die. Basically saying, Dad, you're worried about Benjamin dying. If we don't take Benjamin, we're all going to die. Us and all our families and kids and everybody, because there's no food. So, Dad, let me take him, and I'll be responsible. If I don't bring him back, I'll answer for it. So he takes personal responsibility for Benjamin's safety. Remember that. Judah does. Verse 10, for if we had not lingered, surely by now we'd have returned the second time. He's saying, Dad, if we'd went back when we first got back here, we'd have been back now with more food. So we've got to get down there and get some more food. Verse 11, and their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the best fruits of the land in your vessels and carry down a present for the man, a little balm and a little honey, spices and myrrh, pistachio nuts and almonds. Take double money in your hand and take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. You remember when they got back last time, Joseph had placed their money in their bags and they got back home and opened up. And not only was the grain there, but all the money was there. And they went, uh-oh. Because they're thinking, oh man, the guy's going to think we like left and didn't pay, or that we stole the money or something. So his dad says, look, if you got to go, go. But now take a present. Take some gifts for this man. And take double money. Not only money to purchase what you're going to get, but take back the money that we had before so he can see that you're honest guys. Verse 13, take your brother also and arise, go back to the man. Verse 14, and may God Almighty give you mercy before the man, that he may release your other brother in Benjamin. If I am bereaved, I am bereaved. You know, I really can't, in a sense, fault Israel, Jacob, for praying this. But, you know, sometimes we pray small prayers. You know, well, Lord, could you just kind of do this for me? The Lord's going, if you knew what I was going to do for you. I mean, he's saying here, well, may God just have mercy on you, and may he release your brother and Benjamin, come back. And if I'm bereaved, I'm bereaved. Israel, you'll not only have Simeon back and Benjamin back, but you're going to have Joseph back, the one you think is dead. And through Joseph, your entire family will be delivered. Not just what you're asking for, but far and above, far and beyond what you're even praying. Verse 15. So the men took that present and Benjamin, and they took double money in their hand and arose and went down to Egypt, and they stood before Joseph. Now remember, they don't know it's Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, take these men to my home and slaughter an animal and make ready, for these men will dine with me at noon. Then the man did as Joseph ordered, and the man brought the men into Joseph's house. Now the men, the brothers, were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house. And they said, "It is because of the money which was returned in our sacks the first time that we were brought in, so that he may make a case against us and seize us to take us as slaves with our donkeys." So they don't know that there's this, you know, that they're going to be treated nicely. They think, oh man, he knows about the money and he thinks we stole it, and he's having us taken to his house because he's going to bring a case against us. We've really had it now. They think they're in big trouble. Joseph is just letting this whole thing unfold. Interesting stuff. Verse 19. So they think it's because of the money. So it says, "When they drew near to the steward of Joseph's house, they talked with him at the door of the house and said, 'Oh, sir, we indeed came down the first time to buy food. But it happened, when we came to the encampment, that we opened our sacks, and there each man's money was in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. So we have brought it back in our hand. And we have brought down other money in our hands to buy food. We do not know who put our money in our sacks.'" So they're going, oh man, they're calling us into the house and we're in trouble here, and he's going to bring a case against us. So as soon as they kind of get the ear of the steward of the house, the guy kind of runs the household there for Joseph, they go, "Hey, come here. He got to tell you, hey, we left. We found the money and we didn't take it. And here it is. We brought it back. We brought more money." And they're trying to kind of say, tell the steward. They're kind of pleading their cause to the steward to hopefully get out of trouble. Verse 23, "But he," the steward, "said, 'Peace be with you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money.' Then he brought Simeon out to them." This is one of those places, I've said this as we've gone through the study, but every so often I just pause because it doesn't tell us, but I can't help but wonder how they reacted at certain points. I mean, think of that. They're like, okay, you know, we're in trouble. Let's tell the steward, "Hey, honest, we don't have the money God, and we brought it back." And, you know, and all of a sudden he goes, "Hey, don't worry about it. Peace be upon you. Your God and the God of your father has given you your sacks. And I had your money. Well, here's your brother Simeon." Now, that statement, "your God." And because the Egyptians, basically, my understanding, were very, very polytheistic, had all these foreign gods and everything. And yet, this guy specifically says, "your God." Now, that had to make them wonder. You'd think, like, what? Well, you know, right away, you got to think, kind of their wondering level should have cranked up a notch here. Like, what's going on? Wait a minute. He had the money and he's not down on us, and they're letting Simeon come to us, and he's talking about our God and the God of our father doing this. You'd think, and maybe it did indeed kind of perk their interest up. Certainly should have. Verse 24, "So the man brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water and washed their feet, and he gave their donkeys feed. Then they made the present ready for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that they would eat bread there." So rather than all of a sudden being in trouble, all of a sudden he says, "Oh, don't worry about it. We know about the money, and here's your brother. And by the way, here, let's wash up your feet, and here's some food, and there's going to be a meal for you with the guy that runs this place." Whoa! So right away they start getting their present ready. Remember, they took down a little gift of the pistachio nuts and all that stuff. They start getting their gift ready. "Hey, we're going to eat, you know, lunch with this guy." So they're getting their gift all ready. Verse 26. "And when Joseph came home, they brought him the present which was in their hand into the house and bowed down before him to the earth. Then he asked them about their well-being and said, 'Is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? See, he's still acting like, oh yeah, that guy, that your father you talked about, it's his dad. But is he still okay?' And they answered, 'Your servant, our father, is in good health. He is still alive.' And they bowed their heads down and prostrated themselves." In other words, they're just kind of showing that, you know, and that they're giving him honor and everything. Verse 29, "Then he lifted his eyes," this is Joseph, "and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son." Remember, they are the only two brothers that had the same mother. "He lifted his eyes, saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, 'Is this your younger brother of whom you spoke to me?' And he said, 'God be gracious to you, my son.' Now his heart yearned for his brother. So Joseph made haste and sought somewhere to weep. And he went into his chamber and wept there." You know, Joseph must have been experiencing a whole lot of emotions. He's kind of trying to be cool and talk to them and go, "Oh, is this your younger brother? Well, you know, God be with you, my son." But it says inside, he's just breaking up. He's just, his heart yearned, but he's not ready yet to reveal who he is. So he makes excuse and he gets out in his own chamber, gets away from where they are, and he just weeps. All these emotions going on. But he's patiently letting God's plan unfold because there's some more steps yet until he's going to reveal what's going on. Verse 31. Then he, Joseph, washed his face and came out and restrained himself and said, "Serve the bread." So they set him a place by himself. That's Joseph. He oversees. He's like, you know, the second in command, but he's like, be honored here. They set him a place by himself, and them by themselves, meaning his brothers. Now they have another place they're sitting. And the Egyptians who ate with them by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat food with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. It was in their culture, obviously, by this statement. The Egyptians did not eat with these other races, did not eat with the Hebrews. And so to be able to serve this meal, three tables, or I don't know if they were at tables, but three places of eating were set up. Joseph has a place, and the brothers have their place, and the Egyptians by themselves. Now, I don't know how big Joseph's place was or house, but apparently it's big enough where they can all sit enough separately to fit the custom and yet be able to see each other. So he has them all seated out here. But that's not the interesting thing. The really interesting thing is not that all these groups sit separately, but watch this, verse 33. And they sat before him, and let's talk about the brothers, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked in astonishment at one another. What's this mean? When Joseph sets the table for his brothers and has, you know, his guys have the brothers take their seat, he sits them in their birth order. Now, he doesn't know them in terms of, they don't know it's Joseph, their brother. And all of a sudden he goes, okay, now you're here, and you're here, and you're here, and you're here. And he sits them right in their birth order. And so it says they start looking around each other, it says, in astonishment at one another. They start going, what is going on? First, we're not in trouble. And he says the thing about our God has done all. And then he sits us in our birth order. Then he took servings to them from before him, but Benjamin's serving was five times as much as any of theirs. So they drank and were merry with him. This whole seating them in their birth order and all, what are the odds of him just randomly setting them according to their ages? Well, it's interesting. One commentary I read said they've actually done the math. And they've explained it. All you have to do is take all different combinations of, you know, you have the, well, you don't have Joseph in there, so what do you have? The 11 other brothers, whatever, there. And you take all different combinations of possibly sitting there. This commentator said, after doing the math, you can come up with, it's actually, something like 39 million or something to one of all different math and possibilities when you get up there and all this. So but the point is, so they're looking around going, what is this? So they look at each other in astonishment. And then, as they serve food, he says, Give that younger guy five times the amount of everybody else. So they're watching his plate being piled up really high. You know, and they're going, man, you know, just step by step, this thing's kind of unfolding. Now, it doesn't say so, but you got to wonder, some of these little steps, was Joseph just wanting to bless Benjamin because this is his full brother? This is his only full brother? Maybe so. I mean, there's also a little bit of a test still. I wonder if their brothers are still good. You know, the brothers were awful jealous of Joseph one time. I wonder if they're going to be jealous of Benjamin if he gets a little more than them. Well, they passed the test. They just drink and were merry with him. They all just rejoice. And they don't make any big deal out of it. Chapter 44. And he, Joseph, commanded the steward of his house, saying, "Fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of a sack." So they're going to do it again now. Remember what happened the first time? They're going to do it again. They're going to put their money back in the mouth of the sack, right in the top of the sack there. "Also, put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest." So in Benjamin's sack, "take my silver cup and put it in there, and his grain money." So he did, according to the word that Joseph had spoken. As soon as the morning dawned, the men were sent away, they and their donkeys. So they had this meal and all, and so they're having fun privately. Joseph tells his steward, "Hey, put the money in the sack. Fill up their sack with grain, but put the money back in there. And then the youngest, even put my silver cup in his sack also." Then the morning dawned, the men are sent away, they and their donkey. So they head out. when they had gone out of the city and were not yet far off, so they're just barely out of the city gates, Joseph said to his steward, get up and follow the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one from which my Lord drinks, and with which he indeed practices divination? You have done evil in so doing. So he says, okay. As soon as Joseph sees him out of the city gates, he tells the steward, now we'll go after him and catch him and say, why would you do this after my master treated you so well? Why would you take the money and take his special silver cup? So, verse 6, so he overtook them, and he spoke to them these same words. And they said to him, why does my Lord say these words? Far be it from us that your servants should do such a thing. You'd think they would learn that things tend to pop up in their sacks, you know? And before responding too quick, since it happened last time, you might think they go, uh-oh. But anyway, they go, why would you accuse him of such a thing? Verse 8, look, we brought back to you from the land of Canaan the money which we found in the mouth of our sacks. How then can we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? Then they offer this, with whomever of your servants it is found, let him die. Oh, why do we say hasty words? Let him die, and we also will be my Lord's slaves. And he, that's the steward, said, now also let it be according to your words. He with whom it is found shall be my slave, and you shall be blameless. Then each man speedily let down his sack to the ground, and each opened his sack. So he searched. That means now the steward starts searching the sacks. He began with the oldest and left off with the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes, which is a sign of mourning, of course. And each man loaded his donkey and returned to the city. You think, oh, man. Oh, the money's in here. Look, in Benjamin, they find the cup. So they just tear their clothes. That's, we know that's a Jewish sign of mourning and grief and all. And they load up their donkeys. They head back into the city. We've had it. The story of how Joseph now arranges things for the brothers to be brought back. That's what's unfolding here at this first part of chapter 44. Much like last time, Joseph has put money in their sack. Also, he's put his cup in Benjamin's sack. Now, again, we're not told why Joseph specifically does the specific steps that he does. It could be he's testing them to see if they've changed, as I mentioned a minute ago. They had treated him very poorly. Remember, they had treated Joseph very poorly. Perhaps he's seeing if they've ever changed, if they've learned their lesson along the way. But even that's only speculation. Whatever the reason is, we can say this. Joseph is either testing them, he's just putting them to some stress, something, but he's putting them through a series of tests of sorts here, it would seem. Interestingly enough, the brothers come through with real good colors this time. They come shining through compared to how they treated Joseph. Notice, the steward had said, just the one with the cup will be the slave. You don't have to be slave, not all of you. Just the one with the cup is found. Because what's he say up here? He says, verse 10, no, just the one with whom the cup is found shall be my slave, and you shall be blameless. So the idea is, you don't have to all pay the price. Whoever has it, he's the slave, the rest of you can go. They find it in Benjamin's sack. How are they going to respond to this test? See, at this point, the brothers could have taken off and gone home. The brothers very well could have said, oh, tough going, Benjamin. Oh, man, that's too bad. But you know what? I'll tell you what, we'll tell Dad about it when we get home. And, you know, see you later, Benjamin. We're out of here. And off they go. Because the steward said, no, just the one. They could have been free from all the hassle, from the pressure of what's going to be like going back to this second-in-command guy again. But they don't do that. They go back with him. They cast their lot with Benjamin. See, the potential is they're in big trouble. They don't take the opportunity to get out of there. They all load up their sacks and they head back. Apparently, there had been some changes in these brothers. They're getting a second chance, so to speak. And they're showing they've learned the lesson. Thank God for second chances. Not that you can never go back and redo what you've done before. And God doesn't ask you to somehow repay that in anything. But yet, ever know sometimes he brings you back to a situation again or a trial or a lesson he's teaching you? And hope, you come up to those and you go, Lord, I hope I've learned it this time. Or sometimes you come up to a gate and say, whoops, that tells me I need to learn something else from it. But whatever the case might be, thank God for second chances. They get a second chance here, so to speak. And this time, they are rising to the occasion. Verse 14. So Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, and he was still there. He was waiting for him. I bet he was there. And they fell before him on the ground. And Joseph said to them, what deed is this you have done? Did you not know that such a man as I can certainly practice divination? Then Judah said, what shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Here we are, my Lord's slaves, both we and he also with whom the cup was found. Interesting. They don't cop a plea here. They certainly could have, but they don't. Matter of fact, they go, God has found out the iniquity of your servants, and yet they know they didn't do this. But they choose not to do that. They knew they had purposely taken the cup or the money. But they did know they were guilty of what they'd done to Joseph. And this very well may be the selling of Joseph that they're still wrestling with. Remember, we saw it a couple of chapters ago, that they've still struggled with. They had this guilt over what they'd done to him. When all this started unfolding, remember they started arguing amongst themselves, see, this is happening because of what we did to Joseph. And even now, you know, you just got to wonder if that's maybe not what they're talking about. God's found out the iniquity of your servants. Either way, they kind of they don't cop a plea here. They just say, here we are. We have no plea. Make us your slaves. Just set it out there. Make us your slaves. We have no argument against this. Verse 17. But he, Joseph, said, far be it from me that I should do so. The man in whose hand the cup was found, he shall be my slave. And as for you, go up in peace to your father. Joseph says, just leave Benjamin with me. Just leave Benjamin here as my slave. The rest of you guys can go. Again, do they go, oh boy, and head on out? No, they don't go. Instead, we now are going to enter some scripture, some verses, in which we read of Judah interceding for Benjamin. And it really is a beautiful intercession. Very interesting verses as he now intercedes for Benjamin. So after Joseph says, no, just Benjamin will be my slave, the rest of you can go. Verse 18. Then Judah came near to him and said, oh my Lord, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's hearing, and do not let your anger burn against your servant, for you are even like Pharaoh. My Lord asked his servants, saying, have you a father or a brother? And we said to my Lord, we have a father, an old man, and a child of his old age, who is young. His brother is dead. That's the one they're talking to, by the way. They're still calling him dead, but it's actually him standing there. But they don't know what's happened to him. And he alone, meaning Benjamin, is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him. Then you said to your servants, bring him down to me, that I may set my eyes on him. And we said to my Lord, the lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. But you said to your servants, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you shall see my face no more. So it was, when we went up to your servant my father, that we told him the words of my Lord. And our father said, go back and buy us a little food. But we said, we cannot go down. If our younger brother is with us, then we will go down. For we may not see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us. Then your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. Now remember, Joseph's taking this in, and he's one of those two sons. And the one went out from me, and I said, surely he is torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. So he's saying, this is how our father, this is what he thinks has happened to his other son. But if you take this one also from me, meaning Benjamin, and calamity befalls him, you shall bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave. Now, therefore, when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life, it will happen, when he sees that the lad is not with us, that he will die. So your servants will bring down the gray hair of your servant, our father, with sorrow to the grave. For your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father forever. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad as a slave to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me, lest perhaps I see the evil that would come upon my father?" Very interesting, beautiful verses as Judah intercedes for Benjamin. It's a very touching intercession. He just lays it out for Joseph. Now, remember how this is probably really nailing Joseph's heart, because it's talking about his father and his brother and all. And he says, this is the only one remaining of the same mother, Rachel. And the first one is dead. And if he loses Benjamin, our father's he's not going to make it through that kind of news. Please, let me stay in Benjamin's place and let Benjamin go home to his father. You have to give Judah credit here. He is offering to actually take his brother's place as a slave. Now, of course, in these verses, Judah is a type. That means an example, so to speak, of Jesus, in that he's offering to take the place of the one who's supposed to experience the punishment. Now, Jesus, of course, did more than offer. He indeed took upon himself our punishment. But in this example, the point is, Judah points towards Jesus and his offer as he took our punishment on himself. It's a beautiful typology here. So he sets this intercession, rather lengthy, but yet very touching. He comes right down and he goes, don't keep Benjamin. Let me take his place. I'll be your slave. But his father will die if he doesn't get back. He's lost his other son, which is this Joseph, he thinks. He thinks he's lost him. He says, and if he loses Benjamin, he'll die. We can't do that to our father. Please, let me take his place. I would say the brothers have experienced some kind of change, wouldn't you? They're responding differently than they used to think. Chapter 45. Then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him. So at this point, Joseph just breaks. After this intercession by Judah on Benjamin's behalf, really having to do with caring so much for this father, he didn't want the father to go through that kind of stress and pain. After hearing this, Joseph is now going to reveal who he is to his brothers. The time has come. Awesome verses. Then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him. And he cried out, "Make everyone go out from me." So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. So basically at this point, and here's Judah, he goes, you know, inside he just seems to say, no, he's losing. He goes, that's it. He goes, everybody out, except for these guys. So all the stewards and everybody scamper out. Verse 2, and he wept aloud. And the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard it. At this point, Joseph has reached it. He can't hold back any longer. Think of the years that have passed as we've studied this. The years in the pit and off into slavery and in Potiphar's house and the time in the prison and now the time of serving as Pharaoh's second in command and all those things that he's been through. Been alone. He'd gone through all that without his family, not knowing really what's going on back at home, what's happening to them. And now his brothers stand before him, and after all these series of kind of testings or events that have gone on, it's now time to reveal who he is. Breaks, and he just begins to cry. Crowds cry so loud that all those that kind of left the room, they can hear back inside that he's crying. Now what the brothers do at this point, you know, probably going, whoa, man, that intercession really touched him. You know, Judah really, boy, he really did a good job there. Well, he doesn't know the real thing that's going on here. Verse 3, then Joseph said to his brothers, and think of all, I just want to kind of soak in this for a moment, think of all the chapters we've read, and all that's gone on, and all the brothers coming to him, but they didn't know who he was, and he sent them back, and all this stuff going on, back and forth, all these things, they never knew. And now we're at that moment. He's crying, he's in there alone with his brothers. Verse 3, and then Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Does my father still live? At that point, of course, the brothers casually entered into conversation with him. No, what's it say? But his brothers could not answer him. They were speechless, for they were dismayed in his presence. Now, as you know, we covered verses 1 through 8 this morning. I encourage you to get that tape if you're led. These are awesome verses. We can't go into as much detail right now as we did this morning, but awesome, but as we did talk about this morning, this word dismayed could mean even that they were fearful or and all. I mean, they just, he says, I'm Joseph. And you got, I mean, they just said, so they're speechless. I'm sure they just went in shock at that moment. He's like, I mean, they thought they were in trouble a moment ago. They weren't sure. Now it's like, we're Joseph. I mean, no, I'm Joseph. And they're going, I mean, wait, what do they do with that? It says they just stand there speechless, dismayed, in awe, in amazement. I am Joseph. How's my dad? It has been pointed out that Joseph, in many places in these chapters, these many chapters regarding his life and all, that Joseph many times is an example of, or what's called a type, of Jesus Christ. There's a commentator by the name of Pink, and he writes some good commentaries. He has one called Gleanings in Genesis. Pink points out what he believes to be 101 ways in which Joseph is a type of Jesus. In his commentary, he actually goes through every single one of them. He points out 101 ways in which he believes Jesus is a type of, excuse me, that Joseph is a type of Jesus. We have one before us right now. Because Jesus had been despised and rejected by his brothers. He came into his own and his own received him not. He was rejected by his family, by his brothers, by the nation of Israel. Just as Joseph's brothers did not recognize him the first time they saw him, so Israel did not recognize Jesus the first time they saw him. Now, we come to a time in which Joseph reveals who he is to them, and they finally recognize him. Just as Jesus, there's coming a time when he will once again turn and deal with the nation of Israel, and Jesus will reveal himself to the nation of Israel when he comes again as Messiah. And they will look upon him who they pierced. And of course they will mourn. Not recognized the first time, but then acknowledged the second time. And that's just one. And one author feels it over 100 ways which Joseph is an example of Jesus. When you read your Old Testament, look for Jesus. He's woven all through it. Because he's the center. He's the focus. It's all about him. This whole thing's about preparing the line of the Messiah. And he's woven all through here. Amen. There you go. So, verse 4. And Joseph said to his brothers, please come near to me. So they came near. I wonder what they did. They all kind of together, kind of. they all kind of shuffle over. You're like, okay, I guess. You know, I mean, I don't know. He said, I'm Joseph. And they just stand there going, speechless, in amazement. And he goes, please come near. So they said they all came near. You just kind of see, kind of in a line going, okay. They come up to him. And I'm sure they're just going, you know, just in astonishment. Then he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now, do not therefore be grieved. Don't be sad or angry with yourself because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. God's purpose in this whole thing, in all that Joseph had been going through, was to preserve his family and the line of the Messiah, to preserve their lives. God had promised it to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that from them the Messiah would come. From them, all nations would be blessed. Their seed would be more than the sands. God promised it, and he's doing it. And Joseph has come to realize that, and he sees it, and he tells him that. He goes, now don't be sad and don't be angry, because God has sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Joseph proclaims God was behind it all. So important to remember that. When we go through those prison experiences, those pit experiences, those events we don't understand, circumstances we don't get it. So important to understand that God's behind it. And he's out for our good. And he is going to work all things for good. That was the focus of this morning. I encourage you to get that tape if you would just want to focus in on that aspect. God was setting all this up to deliver them. The pit, the camels, the prison, the palace, they were all a part of God's plan to work a great deliverance. The same for us. He wants to work in us and through us a great work. No, we don't understand His means, His ways sometimes. Joseph didn't know it at the time so often, but now he's gained God's perspective and he's able to declare and he's trying to get the brothers to see, hey, God has done all this. God's overseeing all this because He is working in great deliverance on our behalf. For a moment, turn over to Psalm 105. Let's go to Psalm 105. The 105th Psalm. Verse 16. Talks a little bit about what Joseph went through. And it also helps us see that God was doing it all. Psalms, of course, are written much later, but they're reflecting back upon it. It says, moreover, he called for a famine in the land. He destroyed all the provision of bread. He sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. They hurt his feet with fetters. He was laid in irons until the time that his word came to pass. The word of the Lord tested him. The king sent and released him. The ruler of the people let him go free. He made him lord of his house and ruler of all his possessions, to bind his princes at his pleasure and teach his elders wisdom. This is kind of just a recording here of God's faithfulness to the nation of Israel. And there's this little insertion here in the psalm about what Joseph went through. And as he was one link, so to speak, in the chain of God delivering his people. Joseph suffered in his process. It talks about it here. They hurt his feet. He was laid in irons, it talks about. He was in prison. He was falsely accused. And we're talking about years, not days of unjust treatment. Years. How might you and I have handled all that? How might you and I have handled slavery, prison? I suspect I would have been much more of a complainer than Joseph was. Now, I can't speak for you, but think about it a moment. But Joseph kept his focus on God. And he's quick to point out here, it's God who delivered, it's God who is setting all this up. You can go back to our text in Genesis there, 45. So he says, it wasn't you who sent me here, but God. It's not coincidence. God's doing this. God is always in control. Now he gives him instruction, verse 9. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph. Now think about that. Go back to your dad and tell him, by the way, Joseph says this. His dad's in for good news. If we'll just trust God, we're all in for good news. Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near to me. You and your children, your children's children, your flocks and your herds and all that you have. There I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there are still 5 years of famine. And behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth that speaks to you. So you shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt and of all that you have seen, and you shall hurry and bring my father down here. Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. So they're hugging each other and they're crying. Moreover, he kissed all his brothers and wept over them, and after that, his brothers talked with him. I bet. What a discussion. I mean, they're hugging and, you know, and he's getting, you know, in that culture, you kiss on them, you know, they give that Eastern type kiss and all. He's greeting them and he's hugging them, and they're just, there's all this outpouring of affection and all for each other. He said, now go back and tell our dad what you've seen, what's going on here, and you tell him, come on down here. We're going to put him in the land of Goshen. Land of Goshen is an area, that's a very fertile area in the Nile Delta area of Egypt. He says, come on down. We're going to put you there to live. So they overcome their speechlessness and they all begin to talk. Verse 16, now the report of it was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, Joseph's brothers have come. So it pleased Pharaoh and his servants well. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this, load your animals and depart, go to the land of Canaan. Bring your father and your household and come to me. I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you will eat the fat of the land. Now, you are commanded, do this, take carts out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and your wives, bring your father and come. Also, do not be concerned about your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. Notice Pharaoh and the people's reaction, the people of Egypt's reaction to all this. God had made Joseph so highly respected. Indeed, God had used Joseph to save the Egyptians, they knew it, that they're excited for Joseph. And Pharaoh gladly opens his country to his family, to Joseph's family. God preparing pits and prisons, and yet now finding such favor. Think of it. God had given Joseph such favor that all of Israel's family are going to be blessed through him. Joseph had a great reputation with them, but Joseph was quick to say, it's God's doing. God is doing all this. Verse 21. Then the sons of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them carts according to the command of Pharaoh, and he gave them provisions for the journey. He gave to all of them, to each man, changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. And he sent to his father these things, 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and food for his father for the journey. So he sent his brothers away, and they departed and said to them, see that you do not become troubled along the way. So he sends them off now back to their dad to get him and get all the family and bring him back so they'll be okay through the famine. Verse 25. And they went up out of Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to Jacob their father. And they told him, saying, Joseph is still alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart stood still because he did not believe them. Now, it's not that he literally died right there, but basically, I mean, hey, your son Joseph, he's alive, and he is a governor over all the land of Egypt. Another one of those cases of, you know, just stunned. Jacob is stunned at this point. But when they told him all the words which Joseph had said to them, and when he saw the carts which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob their father revived. Then Israel, same guy, said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. You know, it wasn't that long ago that Jacob, a few chapters ago, said what? Everything's against me. He thought all things were against him. He's about to find out that God is for him. Indeed, he's finding it out right now. He's going to get there. They're going to get to Egypt, and the royal red carpet's going to be rolled out for him. Oh, that we'd all remember that only God sees the big picture. And he says, simply trust him. Just trust. We're going to tackle chapter 46. Hang in there. So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. So now they're leaving Hebron. They're heading south, west there, going down to Egypt. They stop at Beersheba to offer sacrifices to God. Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here I am. So he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt. Remember, there had been a time they stayed away from Egypt. Egypt wasn't cool. They say, now, don't be afraid. Go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. And Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. This is God's confirmation of what he's about to do in taking Israel and his family into Egypt. The idea that Joseph's going to put his hand upon your eyes is a reference to death. It's very common that they would do that. Joseph, his idea is you're going to see Joseph, and he'll be there when you die. So he packs up his family and heads off. Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones, and their wives in the carts which Pharaoh had sent to carry them. So they took their livestock and their goods, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and went to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him, his sons and his sons' sons, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt. Now, we're not going to read through all these names. You can read through them if you want, but it basically starts naming just all different sons and their families that went with them on the journey into Egypt. We'll move down to verse 27. Well, we'll go to 26. So after giving this whole list, kind of a listing of just everybody who made the journey, it says, all the persons who went with Jacob to Egypt, who came from his body, meaning his family and all, besides Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph, who were born to him in Egypt, were 2 persons. All the persons of the house of Jacob who went to Egypt were 70. So basically, 70 people, Israel and his family, go into Egypt. When they come out of Egypt, some 400 years after this, we will see that there's going to be 600,000 adult males over the age of 20. If you put in the wives and their children, if you just double the 600,000, you get 1.2 million right there. If you add children to it, it's estimated that there were probably around 1.6 to 2 million people that make the exodus out of Egypt. From 70, and if you do the math, it's fine, exponential thing which just grows. But I'm just pointing this out to show that from that 70, there's going to be a whole bunch. They're going to come out of here. God did indeed keep his promise, making a great nation of them. He says, go on down, don't be afraid. I'm going to make a great nation of you. And he does indeed do that. Verse 28, then he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out before him the way to Goshen. And they came to the land of Goshen. So Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel. And he presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. Father and son reunited. Picture the scene for just a moment. Think of all those years that had passed. Thought his son had been torn to pieces by an animal or something. It's a very touching scene. Nowadays, when they seem to make these movies about the Bible, it seems like they go out of their way to make them not follow the Bible. To me, follow the Bible, you know, the best story you could have. Just awesome. Dramas and relationships and this thing unfold. Like we've been studying about Joseph and all. I mean, got to make a better movie than just follow the text. They always feel they got to put in all kind of some weird story in Hollywood. I don't know why. This is good stuff. You just picture. Think of now. Think of father seeing son after all these years of thinking he was lost, thinking he was dead. So they hug and they cry, you know. And Israel said to Joseph, now let me die, since I have seen your face, because you are still alive. Then Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh and say to him, my brothers and those of my father's house who are in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for their occupation has been to feed livestock. And they have brought their flocks, their herds, and all that they have. So it shall be, when Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation, that you shall say, your servant's occupation has been with livestock from our youth even till now, both we and also our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. The Egyptians look down on shepherds. And he says, look, when you get up there, just tell them what you do. Tell them who you are. Because, you know, it's the Pharaoh's plan to give them this really good land, and indeed he does do that. So he gives them that, and they go down to Goshen to live. So we've arrived now at the end of chapter 46. Good stuff. Let's stand. Next week we press on, Lord willing, chapter 47. Trust God is blessing you. I'm getting a whole bunch out of it. Good stuff. Good stuff. You need prayer tonight. There'll be prayer partners in the prayer room, far right-hand corner up here. Let's go out this week and just walk in that awesome truth that God is sovereign, he's in charge, he is faithful, he keeps his promises, he's out for our good, not for evil, that he works all things for good, and that whether we see it or not, whether we understand it or not, he's working on our behalf. As David said, this one thing I know, God is for me. That's good news. Father, thank you. Who are we, Lord? Who are we that you should be even mindful of us? And yet, you have poured out upon us your love. All glory to you, Lord. We quickly acknowledge we don't deserve it, haven't earned it, but we gladly receive it. Thank you for loving us like you do. Lord, help us. Help us be those who walk in faith. Help us be those who walk not by sight, but by faith. Help us be those who don't lean on circumstances. Don't look to our own understanding, but in all our ways, Lord, help us just to acknowledge you, to trust you, and thank you. Thank you that you are in charge and you are faithful. Lord, we just rejoice in you. Thank you in Jesus' precious name. Amen. Let's close the song together.